Well, the failure of APEC leaders to agree on a joint statement has exposed the deep divisions between the US and China on trade and on security. Trade Minister David Parker was at the summit and said New Zealand could play a role as a bridge between China and the US and position itself as an honest broker. The Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, has just returned from Papua New Guinea, where the summit was held, and the Prime Minister joins us now. Tēnā koe, good morning.
Morena, Kaim.
Now, David Parker indeed said on The Nation on TV3 on Saturday that, quote, we're trying to position ourselves as a bridge between the US and China. Really?
Well, look, certainly one of the issues that has come up is around, you know, the use of trade tariffs, the role of the WTO, whether or not there's an issue around WTO reform. And look, on those issues, you know, I think it is fair to say New Zealand's always taken a principles-based approach. We are a trading nation. We rely on trade and we rely on the predictability of people applying the rules and the rules being applied fairly. And so, you know, in the area of WTO reform, we can play a role. We can act in the interest of trading nations and small island trading nations rather than a self-interested position, which I do think can make us an honest broker.
So in what respect can we be a bridge between US and China?
Oh, well, look, when it comes to the issue of WTO reform, that is something that I think the Trade Minister is playing a helpful role. There have been some discussions around EU proposals, modification of them around the appellate body reform, a range of issues where we're trying to help broker some solutions because, of course, the WTO and that reform agenda has become pretty contentious. But more generally, Guyon as well, I think, actually, what I saw at APEC was consensus forming around the need for a rules-based order, that there is a group of people there saying that there is no need for the two major superpowers to sneeze and for the rest of the world to catch cold. We have the IMF predicting that there could be anything as high as 0.8% reduction in global growth as a result of this trade war. So there is, I think, a growing call, not just from New Zealand, but from other APEC members to say, let's take a step back, let's de-escalate, because we'll all face the consequences if we do not.
Mm. How did you see consensus when the APEC leaders, for the first time in their history, couldn't even get it together to sign a communique?
Yeah, and this usually is something that doesn't play out, really, amongst leaders. It's fair to say it was unusual, but it won't probably seem unusual to people when they look at the international dialogue that's going on. So that debate around tariff use, IP, and the WTO came into the APEC forum. And so you will have seen the rhetoric from both China and the US leading into that. And in some respects, it won't come as a surprise. However, there actually was a significant amount of consensus on the statement as a whole, bar a couple of areas. And so what I hope we might see is that there will be a statement from the chair, and I hope that statement from the chair will try and reflect that actually there was consensus on a whole range of issues.
Sure.
There were just a few sticking points.
You talk about the rhetoric from both sides, the US and China. Why would we want to be positioning ourselves in the middle of this fight and position ourselves as a bridge between the US and China, in the words of David Parker?
Well, our application of our values-based approach actually is what an independent foreign policy is all about. For us, it's not about picking sides. And I think that, you know, there is an issue with the increasing rhetoric around you're either in one lane or you're in the other. I think that, you know, that is contrary to the independent foreign policy approach that we've always taken.
So is it true that we are as friendly and as aligned with China as we are with the US?
Oh, it's fair to say that we align ourselves with a set of principles and values, Guyon, and that some of these issues aren't black and white, but we will always make a decision on issues based on those principles. So, you know, for instance, we're unashamed multilateralists. We do ask that other countries apply the rules of trade. We do believe the WTO is an important forum, but we also agree there's need for reform. So these issues aren't about one side or the other.
Yeah, but when we look at China and the US and our relationship with those two, with one of them, we're in a five-country spying and intelligence relationship called Five Eyes.
Yep.
And the other one, we ain't. So can you really say that the relationship between New Zealand and both of those superpowers is equal?
Well, what David Parker was talking about was our ability to act as a bridge in a very specific element of our relationship, which is the trading element. And I don't think that's an unfair comment to make. No one here is drawing a comparison about the relative importance of each relationship. Rather, the role that we can play internationally on a particular issue of global strategic importance, which is trade, and where New Zealand has a good reputation.
One Belt, One Road initiative of China's. Has New Zealand, what is New Zealand's position on that right now? Because the National-led government signed up to a memorandum of understanding there that we would somehow promote this in the Asia-Pacific. Winston Peters has said that they were too hasty in doing so. What is your view on New Zealand's role in the One Belt, One Road initiative?
So the statement that was signed was a very general one, and it was signed in 2017. And a number of countries have engaged in these. I was speaking with the Chilean president about their position just yesterday. But for Belt and Road initiatives in New Zealand, predominantly overseas, you've seen that there's been discussion about them relative as they relate to infrastructure. New Zealand, of course, has a very specific process that we go through for infrastructure projects, where actually we competitively tender, we partner where it makes sense to partner, or we run them via the government where it makes sense that's what we do. And so for us, it's probably more likely to be that you might see us looking more at people-to-people links, tourism opportunities. But really, those are the parameters that we're still between officials really testing at the moment.
Have we stepped back at all? From the One Belt, One Road initiative under your Prime Ministership?
It's kind of hard to describe stepping back when actually the parameters of the initial agreement were very general anyway. So here we had this general agreement, and now it's been incumbent on us as a new government to formulate the parameters of that. We're talking about that at the moment.
Just in the last couple of minutes, I want to talk about these claims of Chinese influence in New Zealand. Anne Marie Brady, the Canterbury University academic, well known to many about speaking out on these issues. She says that China's covert, corrupting and coercive political influence activities in New Zealand are now at a critical level. Do you agree with that?
Oh, look, I'm very cautious around just labelling any individual country's activities in that way. We have to set up in my view, a legislative framework that protects New Zealand's interests, but that's actually, broadly speaking, to protect our interests against a range of challenges. And we've seen, for instance, in the past that we've called out issues of cybersecurity against North Korea, against Russia. And so for me, it's not about individual specific countries, but it's about saying, do we
have the protection? That specifically is, though, isn't it? You've just named them.
Where it's attributable.
Okay. Has China got any attributable?
We have to make sure.
Has China got any attributable corrupting or coercive political influence activities that you are aware of in New Zealand?
We need to be vigilant across the board, Guyon. When it comes to, for instance, specific things like the election, we haven't found evidence there. But that doesn't mean we are naive to the fact that we have to make sure that we have a pretty robust framework to prevent that from being able to occur. One area where I think we did need to do more work is cybersecurity. And that's an area where we are being proactive.
Is this in relation to China?
Challenge. It's across the board, Guyon, across the board. Cybersecurity is a challenge that's being raised in international forums like the East Asia Summit, like APEC. It's, I think, the new frontier, and we need to make sure that we're ready.
Anne-Marie Brady claims that her house was burgled and that possibly her car was tampered with after speaking out against China. Are you aware of any Chinese involvement in those cases?
I've made the point that I don't speak specifically on intelligence briefings, but what I have said publicly is that particularly this last issue, I've been away since that's been raised in the public domain, but I would see that first and foremost as being something the police should investigate, and it would be a matter for them to look into.
Okay, well, you were the one who raised the intelligence issue in that last answer. Is it being looked at by the SIS?
Again, I don't comment on briefings that I've had, but what I will say is I have been away since that happened. But still, this is something that the police should be directly making decisions over rather than me.
Thanks for your time this morning. That's the Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, who's just returned from PNG, talking about the relationship with China and the US.